friend. So rather than determine if I was the person you thought I was, you jumped down my throat. You're wound tight. My first reaction was to argue the point with him, which I realized would only prove his conclusion further. Maybe you're a little right. Just a little. You know, that's how I became interested in musical therapy. Growing up, I learned to use music to relax.
Did you have music on when you tried to drive the stick shift?
I thought back. You know what? I didn't. I was nervous and didn't want to be distracted, so I turned off the radio.
Maybe you should have left it on.
I never thought of that. Maybe you should let me drive yours and see if that works.
Kane laughed. I like my clutch too much.
The drive to Umberto's in New Jersey was normally about 45 minutes on Sunday mornings, but today it was more like an hour and a half. The GW bridge was closed except for one lane, and we crawled to cross. Once traffic opened up on the other side, we started to talk about my research.
Tell me about Umberto.
Well, you read the basics in my summary, I'm sure. He's 73, late stage or stage 6 Alzheimer's, has spent his entire life living in the home he grew up in, even had his medical practice in the house. He was a general practitioner who still made house calls up until 10 years ago. He's been married to Lydia for 51 years, and she visits him every single day. They have one son who lives on the West Coast and comes to see them a few times a year. Most days, Umberto doesn't remember Lydia anymore. He went through a 2-year period of depression and found some happiness with a fellow patient, Carol. Sometimes Umberto and Carol sit and hold hands while Lydia visits him. I've never seen the kind of love his wife has for him. The man she spent her entire life with thinks he's in love with another woman, and she's happy for him. It's the most selfless thing I've experienced. She wants him to truly be happy, even if he finds that happiness with someone else.
Wow.
Yeah. It's something beautiful in an otherwise tragic disease.
And the music he's responding to, it's in Italian?
Yes. When I first started to visit the center, I was working with a larger group, trying to find a few candidates to study individually. Umberto didn't have much interest, even though his wife has control of his medical decisions and had signed him up for the study. I'd interviewed the families to learn about some music from the individual patients' histories, and each week we'd play music and do exercises to see if I could get a response. Umberto had never reacted to anything, one way or the other. He seemed to enjoy music, but neither his wedding song nor anything from other memorable times in his life sparked any type of special interest.
So what made you try Italian music?
It was just a whim, really. The week before, I'd heard Umberto respond to something the nurse asked him in Italian. I hadn't even known he spoke it fluently. Apparently, he slipped into speaking it every once in a while. So the next week, when I came, I thought I'd try an opera. People tend to really respond to the music at a show, so I figured why not play one?
And Umberto responded.
I clutched my chest. He started to sob. It was heartbreaking, but it was the first reaction at all I'd gotten from him with music, negative or positive. That day was the most lucid he'd been in years. He started to tell old stories about his mother that his wife didn't even remember. I wasn't sure if it was the opera itself or the music that brought back a memory.
What do you have planned for today?
I'd been alternating weeks between English and Italian music. This was actually an English week, but I'd decided to change things up a bit. Maybe a little part of me wanted to show off for the sexy professor.
Le nozze di Figaro.
Ah, Mozart.
You're an opera fan? I asked.
I'm a music fan. Doesn't matter what kind. I actually saw Figaro's wedding in undergraduate school. Composition, too. The whole class went as part of the course.
I've never been to an opera. We approached the turn to Regency Village, the assisted living community where Umberto lived, so I pointed up ahead.
Make your next left. You can't really see it until you're almost past it. It sneaks up on you because it's hidden behind those trees.
After we pulled into the parking lot, I started to get a bit nervous. I'd worked on my thesis for over a year. What if Kane found my research flawed or didn't believe it was the music that brought Umberto's memories back to the forefront? While he always enjoyed listening,
not every session brought the same reaction. Kane killed the engine and turned to face me with one arm casually slung over the wheel.
I've read your research. Your arguments are strong. You're going to do fine.
I hadn't mentioned my nerves out loud. He must have read the confusion on my face. His eyes pointed down to my wrist.
You play with your watch when you're nervous.
I'd been fidgeting with my watch. I immediately stopped. When else did I mess with my watch that you noticed it?
The first day of class, after it emptied out and you had to come down the stairs to talk to me.
We stared into each other's eyes.
Earlier in your apartment, when I noticed you weren't wearing a bra.
Embarrassed, I looked around the car to avoid his stare. To my surprise, when my eyes returned to his, he was focused on my lips, which caused me to jump from one nervous habit to another. I bit my lower lip as the sleeping butterflies in my belly woke to a flutter. Kane cleared his throat, but his voice was still gravelly.
You have nothing to be nervous about. Now come on, I'm looking forward to watching you kick ass.
Umberto was with his ladies, Lydia and Carol. He was smiling and laughing as we walked to their table in the visitor's lounge. I whispered who was who to Kane as we approached. His wife's across, and his girlfriend is next to him. Kane whispered back,
Umberto's got some racket going on.
I elbowed him in the abs to shh. Hi, Umberto.
Hi.
Every week was like starting all over. One thing I'd learned is that Umberto was good at pretending he knew who people were.
Did Max go?
He asked. Yes, I whispered to Kane. Max was his dog, a black lab. For some reason, he frequently asks people if Max went to the bathroom. He thinks we were out walking him or something. I turned to the ladies. Hi, Lydia. Hi, Carol. Lydia stood and kissed my cheek. We'd become good friends over the last year. I was just about to introduce Kane when Carol took it upon herself.
Who's the handsome fella? You a new doctor here?
I laughed. This is Kane West, Carol. He's a music professor at Brooklyn College, where I'm a graduate student. Kane delivered a dazzling smile as he extended his hand.
It's very nice to meet you, Carol.
We joined the three of them as they chatted about the movie that had been shown last night. Carol's Alzheimer's was less advanced than Umberto's, so she tended to remember more. She put her hand on Umberto's arm.
The Hunt for Red October. Remember, honey? It had that Sean Connery in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was certain Umberto didn't recollect anything about the movie. Throughout our conversation, Kane was mostly quiet, just observing. I caught his eyes moving back and forth between Lydia's face and where Carol's hand touched Umberto a few times. I'd grown used to the unusual trio, but it was definitely something interesting to watch the first time. A woman who didn't want to claw another woman's eyes out when she caught her touching the man she loved, a man she had spent 51 years being faithful to. Kane was definitely watching for a reaction, but the only one he'd see from Lydia was contentment. She'd come to terms with whatever allowed her husband to feel some happiness. Eventually, the nurse came to collect Carol for an activity. Lydia had insisted we never begin therapy while Carol was present. She didn't want her husband to have a memory that made him reach for her and upset Carol. There was a special place in heaven for Lydia someday. After Umberto hugged Carol goodbye, he sat back down with us, but seemed agitated. Lydia reached across the table and covered her husband's hand.
Umberto, Rachel is going to play you some music. Do you remember that Rachel plays you music sometimes?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was Umberto's way of saying, I have no idea, but I'm not telling you that. She squeezed. Rachel's going to put some headphones on you, okay?
Yeah, sure.
I placed a set of wireless headphones over Umberto's ears while Lydia dug into her purse and took out a small case of earbuds she'd started to carry. It wasn't necessary for her to listen, but she liked to keep in tune with her husband. Realizing for the first time that I hadn't brought an extra set of wireless buds, I offered to share mine with Kane. It wasn't necessarily a hardship, having to inch up directly next to him so we could each listen through one bud.
I started the music, and Umberto immediately closed his eyes. Within seconds, the tension etched in his face seemed to flee. I glanced over at Kane, who was watching Umberto, and he nodded his head and smiled. At some point during the song, Umberto reached out and took his wife's hand. It was such a small gesture, but those tiny moments of recognition made a world of difference to a family dealing with advanced Alzheimer's. We played two songs, and then I removed the headset from Umberto's head. "How are you feeling today, Umberto?"
"Good, good."
I wasn't sure if he felt any different than before, but the agitation from 10 minutes earlier was gone. Lydia tried to build on the effect of the music.
"Umberto, do you remember when Francesca used to play this song?"
"Sure,"
he nodded. Then he pursed all five of his fingers together in the universal Italian grandmother hand language and said,
"Bella parole non pascon i gatti."
Lydia laughed. She looked to me.
"It means fine words don't feed cats. My mother-in-law, Francesca, used to say it all the time. I never really understood what it meant."
We stayed for a few hours, even breaking for lunch and then coming back afterward. But that was the extent of Umberto's brief burst of memories that day. A second round of music in the afternoon didn't bring back any specific recollections, but I hoped the music had something to do with the smiles everyone wore. Lydia looked at her watch.
"Umberto, it's almost time for Mass. Do you want to get washed up before the service?"
"Okay."
She turned to Kane and me.
"Would you like to join us?"
Even though I was definitely not a Sunday Mass person, I'd joined them on a few occasions to observe Umberto's reactions to the music.
"I think we're going to head out," I told her. "It's getting late."
As we were saying our goodbyes, Umberto looked to Kane.
"You going to take Max out now?"
Kane went along with it.
"Yeah, I'll take good care of Max."
After the nurse took Umberto back to his room to get ready, Lydia walked us to the lobby.
"Somehow I don't get offended that my husband has fallen in love with another woman and doesn't remember me, but every time he remembers Max, I can't help but be insulted."
She laughed, but seemed only half-kidding.
"So I hope our Rachel scored an A today. The musical therapy really seems to be working."
I smiled.
"It's not like that. Professor West doesn't give me a grade. He sort of oversees the research I'm doing and the writing of my paper."
"Oh, okay. Well, I hope you were impressed." Kane looked at me with warmth in his eyes.
"I was, very."
Lydia gave me a hug.
"See you next week?"
"I'll be here."
"Will I be seeing you again, Professor?"
"If Rachel will have me."
Are we talking literally or figuratively here?
Back in the car on the drive home, I could tell something was on Kane's mind. He was quieter than usual.
"Did you want to go to Mass? I didn't even think to ask you before I declined, and I've monopolized your entire Sunday."
Kane glanced at me and back to the road.
"Haven't gone to church in 15 years. Wouldn't step back inside if you paid me."
Chapter 12. 15 years ago. What the hell is she doing? I ducked behind a wide marble column to watch. I was later than usual because Liam had been screwing around at band practice and we all lost track of time trying to learn a new song he'd written while drunk last night. Half of what he'd chicken-scratched down on a brown paper bag was smeared and unreadable, but the other half was pretty damn good. So we riffed and riffed, trying to get the jackass to remember the words he'd written. I normally showed up at 12:30 and set myself up in the confessional to wait. My little friend generally wandered in sometime before 1. But today I was late, and she was early. At least I thought she was early. I hadn't really ever seen her clearly enough to be positive it was her. For all I knew, I could be hiding from some other random little girl who'd wandered into church on Saturday afternoon. The old wooden confessional was dark to begin with, and the latticed grate that separated us made it even more difficult to make out any detail other than her ponytail. I knew she had dark hair and was tiny, just like the little girl currently peeking into the priest's side of the confessional. I watched curiously from a distance as she looked around and then opened the door. She stepped inside for half a second and then darted back out and into the parishioner's side, the sinner's side. 5 minutes passed and she hadn't opened the door back up, so when the coast was clear, I made my way over and slipped inside for my priestly duty. The booth looked as it normally did, except for 2 coins on the floor. I figured maybe she was trying to get a peek at the priest. "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned." It had to have been at least 6 weeks now we'd been doing this, yet every time she said those words, I felt an ache in my chest. She was carrying too much baggage for a kid. Lately, we didn't even talk about the sins she thought she was committing. She just showed up and we shot the shit for a half hour or so. I got the feeling I was the only adult she trusted, which was pretty fucking ironic, considering I wasn't even really an adult yet, and I'd been lying to her since the first minute she stepped into the booth. "How was your week?"
"I got in trouble at school."
I smiled to myself. "Oh yeah? What did you do?"
"It was also a sin."
"Tell me about it."
"Well, you know the boy who sits next to me that I told you about, Tommy?"
"The one who always has his hand down his pants?"
"That's him. He made me say a bad word, and I got detention. We both got detention."
"How did he make you say a bad word?"
"We were reviewing shapes in class for some state test. The teacher drew a diamond on the board and asked what shape it was. We'd learned rhombus a few years earlier, but when she called on me to answer, I forgot the word. The teacher gave me a hint to try and help me. She said it started with an R. I got excited because I thought I remembered, and I yelled out the wrong R word."
"What did you yell?"
"I yelled rectum."
I had to stifle my laugh. "Do you know what that means?"
"I do now. Tommy explained it to me by yelling that I was an a-hole."
She paused.
"He said the whole word, too."
I tried to provide some priestly guidance. "Your mistake was honest. It sounds more like Tommy is the one who sinned by using the bad word intentionally, not you."
"Well, I used it, too."
"Oh?"
"At recess, some of the kids were still making fun of me, calling me an a-hole lover. So I told the kids I learned the word rectum from Tommy, because when he has his hands down his pants, he sometimes sticks his thumb up his rectum during class. Only I didn't use the word rectum when I said it."
What I wanted to say was, "Atta girl," but instead I stuck to my priestly ways. "You'll say 3 Hail Marys for using the bad word, but between us, it sounds like Tommy's a jerk and deserved it." My little lamb giggled. "Anything else?" Last week she hadn't mentioned home, and I was anxious to find out how things were going. The only thing I'd been able to draw out of her, other than her own admission that she had bad thoughts about her stepfather, was that he drank too much and yelled. "How are things at home?" I prompted. "Did anything happen to make you have bad thoughts?"
"I wore the headphones you gave me."
2 weeks ago, she told me she got scared when her stepfather yelled at night. She had trouble falling asleep sometimes. I'd suggested she put on headphones and listen to her favorite song to drown out the sound. But she didn't own headphones. So last week I put my extra set in the booth before she arrived and told her to take them home. I explained how shutting her eyes and singing quietly along with the music would help ease her into sleep. "Did it help?"
"Yes. I fell asleep after the 4th time.
I was probably delusional, but I felt like I was helping this kid in some screwed-up way. "That's good."
"I told my sister to try it, but she said she couldn't."
"Does she not have headphones?" She didn't respond for a few minutes. I'd begun to learn that her silence often spoke louder than her voice did.
"She has headphones. She got them for Christmas the year before our mom died. They were in her stocking."
That feeling of dread hit the pit of my stomach. "So why does your sister think she can't wear them? Does she not like music?"
"She has to listen for Benny."
"What does that mean?"
"Sometimes when he's drinking and mad, he comes into her room at night."
Chapter 13. "Are you hungry?" I'd debated asking the question in my head for the last 5 minutes. Even though I'd spent all day with Kane, I wasn't ready for it to end. But I wanted my suggestion to have dinner to come off casual. He'd asked me to grab a bite to eat before. Yet for some reason when it was me doing the asking, I felt like I was asking him out on a date. Kane glanced over and then back to the road. He was quiet, and I got the feeling he was debating the appropriateness of our situation before answering. I was surprised when he said,
"Starving. What did you have in mind?"
"I'm easy. There's a Greek restaurant a few blocks from my place that's good. Or there's Chinese on Grand Street. Or we could go to O'Leary's, and then it'll be my treat again." I smirked at that last part.
"How about Greek, and my treat this time?"
"Sounds good. Take a left on Elwyn Street. It's up on the right if we can find parking. Greek Delight." Inside the restaurant, the hostess sat us in a quiet booth in the back and brought us hummus and pita chips to snack on while we looked at the menu. I knew what I wanted, but Kane took out glasses from his pocket to read the menu. Those really worked on him, although I couldn't help myself.
"How old are you that you need reading glasses?"
He looked up over the rim of his studious Burberry frames.
"You wear glasses. Why does my needing reading glasses mean I'm old?"
"I have an astigmatism. I've needed them to read since I was in a training bra." Kane's eyes dropped to my cleavage before returning to the menu. He grumbled something I didn't catch. When I continued to stare at him, he took his glasses off and looked up at me.
"What?"
"You didn't answer my question. How old are you?"
"Old enough to be your professor."
I dipped a piece of pita in the hummus and popped it in my mouth.
"So what, about 60 then?" "I'm 32, wise ass. Are you happy?"
I smiled. "I am, actually." Kane slipped his glasses back on and returned to the menu. I leaned in. "You don't look a day over 31. He shook his head and continued reading, but I caught the corner of his lip twitch. Why did I love that lip twitch? It felt like a little reward of some sort. I seriously needed my head examined when it came to this man. After he seemed to have decided, he leaned back in the booth.
"You're doing a great job with your research."
"Thank you."
"It's one hell of an interesting dynamic going on there."
I remembered how awkward I'd felt sitting with the trio the first time. "I know. It was weird at the beginning, but I've gotten used to it now. Lydia is a pretty amazing person, isn't she?"
"She is. Not sure I could do what she's doing."
"What do you mean?"
"Watch my wife sit there with another man and smile."
"True love is selfless. She wants the best for him, even if that doesn't include her anymore." The waitress brought our drinks and took our order. Kane had ordered a Greek beer, and I'd ordered my usual diet soda. I had to look away when his lips wrapped around the bottle. I was way too attracted to him to hide it very well.
"You sound like an expert on the subject. I take it you've been in love like that?" he asked.
"Not with a man." Kane's brows jumped, and I realized what that must have sounded like, what he thought. "I meant, I felt that way about my mother. Not that I'm a lesbian or anything. I like men. Not that I have anything against lesbians. I just prefer, you know, men when it comes to sex. Not that I have much of a sex life at the moment." I was definitely babbling. Kane chuckled.
"You're fucking adorable when you get embarrassed."
I drank my cold soda to occupy my mouth and hopefully keep my skin from turning noticeably pink. "Anyway, when my mother was really sick, I wanted her to die so she wouldn't be in pain anymore. I was going to be without a mother, but I didn't care. I just wanted her to be at peace. That's what Lydia and Umberto remind me of." I set my glass down on the table. "How about you? Ever been in love like that?" Kane shook his head.
"Not sure I'm capable of selfless. Spent most of my life on the ish side of self, rather than the less."
"No girlfriends?"
"Plenty of those. None that I wasn't a selfish bastard with."
I stared at him. "That'll change when you meet the right woman." He brought the beer bottle to his lips.
"Maybe. Or maybe I'm just destined for a life of selfish screwing. I could think of worse things."
I couldn't see Kane as selfish. He'd changed my tire after I told him off and interrupted his class. And I couldn't imagine he wasn't attentive in bed. He was so observant that it was often distracting, not to mention how intense he could be. Then there was the musician thing. Skilled hands and good rhythm. No, There was no way Kane West was selfish in bed. Of that, I was certain. He squinted.
What's going on in that head of yours?
What do you mean?
You got quiet after I said there were worse things in life than selfish screwing.
And there was the observant thing again. He paid attention to women. Men who paid attention were good in bed. I was just thinking about what you said. You don't seem selfish to me.
We're not in that kind of a relationship.
Maybe, I shrugged. But you seem too attentive to be selfish in that way, too. A look of understanding crossed Kane's handsome face, as if he'd just realized what I was thinking. He leaned into me with a wicked grin that made my heart palpitate.
I didn't mean I was selfish in bed.
His eyes dropped to my neck and slowly rose to focus on my mouth, which parted for his gaze.
A woman's needs always come before my own, and I enjoy every minute of taking care of those needs.
His eyes returned to mine, and he leaned in even closer.
She comes before me, multiple times.
I swallowed. My whole body reacted, and Kane knew it. He leaned back with a cocky smile and a gleam in his eyes. When I finally attempted to speak, my hoarse voice croaked. Then what are you selfish about?
The stuff that comes after we get out of bed. The relationship part.
Oh.
Not everyone has the ability to be Lydia.
I'm not sure I agree. I think we all have the ability to be Lydia. It's a choice not to try and find your Umberto. And usually there's a reason for that choice. The muscle in Kane's jaw ticked, but he stayed silent. Luckily, our food came shortly after that. Kane had ordered a falafel, and I'd ordered a gyro. We dug in and gave our full attention to eating for the moment. In no time, my meal had turned into a big mess. The pita had torn, and half of my gyro was leaking out. I didn't realize, but white tzatziki sauce had dripped down the back of my hand.
You have some sauce, Kane pointed.
Still holding the gyro, I turned my wrist to look. The sauce had trailed down my hand, past my wrist, and was making its way steadily down my arm, about to drip onto my shirt. If I put down the disaster of a gyro, there was no way I'd be able to pick it back up without it falling apart. So, I licked a line from my arm up over my wrist to my finger, cleaning the mess in one long stroke. Not very ladylike, but it was better than wearing it on my nice shirt. When I looked up, Kane was staring at me.
Christ, are you trying to get me fired?
What? His eyes moved back and forth between mine.
You really have no goddamn clue, do you?
I don't understand. Kane looked down at his food, shaking his head.
Just finish eating. We should go.
The ride back to my apartment was awkward. Neither of us said a word. Honestly, I had no idea what to say. I'd realized Kane's comments had to mean he was turned on by my inadvertent lick show, but it was also a reminder that I needed to stop fantasizing about something that was never going to happen. When we arrived at my apartment building, Kane double-parked and turned off the ignition.
I'm going to walk you up.
You don't have to do that. I'm fine.
I'm not leaving you at the curb.
He opened his door, effectively closing the discussion. Okay, then, I mumbled to myself. The awkwardness continued as we rode the elevator up to my apartment. I fumbled for my keys in front of my door. Thank you again for taking me on and coming with me today.
Of course. I'd do it for any student.
Another reminder. One that hurt. I unlocked the door and opened it. Would you like to come in? I could make you some coffee or something? I really wasn't propositioning him to come in for the proverbial nightcap. It just seemed like the polite thing to say. Kane was quiet for a very long moment.
I think it's best we don't spend time together outside of class anymore. Your research is solid, and I think we have the semester schedule planned out well enough. If you need to discuss your thesis, the department secretary has access to my calendar and can set up an appointment.
Maybe we had gotten a little too friendly, but did I do something to upset you?
No.
He lifted his chin toward the inside of my apartment.
Lock up behind you.
I took a quick shower,
changed into an old concert t-shirt to sleep, and climbed into bed feeling confused and sad. My feelings for Kane had grown despite the fact that I knew it was stupid to fall for a man who had no interest in a relationship, even if he hadn't been my professor. I tried to fall asleep, but it was no use. Plucking my phone from the charger, I thought I might type my notes from today into an email to add to my research later. But when I powered my cell on, it opened to my last text from Davis. I'd completely forgotten to respond to his comment regarding me not texting that I missed him too. Even though the timing was off for us, Davis never gave me mixed signals. He didn't play hot and cold. He owned up to his feelings and was honest with me. I sighed and texted back, "Rachel, I miss you too." Chapter 14. Kane had successfully avoided me for 4 days, until today. There would be no way to avoid seeing me unless he skipped the once-per-semester mandatory faculty meeting TAs were required to attend, as well as professors. I was sitting alone in the back of the large conference room, with a seat open next to me, not that I was saving it for anyone in particular. Kane hadn't shown up yet. Each time someone walked in, my eyes darted to the door. The music department chair had taken his place at the front of the room, readying to begin, when Kane finally showed up. Stopping in the doorway, his eyes scanned the room, falling on me before quickly looking anywhere else. He couldn't have taken a seat farther away from me. I was surprised his hair didn't catch fire during the 45-minute meeting with the way my eyes were burning into the back of his head. After it was over, I stayed in my seat to see if he would walk back out the door without a single word. Kane stood and glanced over at me, but was quickly joined by a woman who walked over to greet him with a big smile. She wore a bright pink suit that screamed for attention, but aside from that, she was actually rather pretty, though I hated to admit that. I'd seen her around the halls and knew she was an adjunct professor, although I didn't know her name. Professor Pink was also the complete opposite of me. She had unnaturally blonde Marilyn Monroe-type hair, stood only a few inches shorter than Kane, and her suit, even being a tacky color, was definitely designer. She was very touchy-feely with Professor West, and there was a definite familiarity in the way she rested her hands on his arms as they spoke. After the second or third time she tossed her hair back and laughed, I was done watching. Standing up, I headed for the door but got stuck behind two professors who were talking while they walked and moving as slow as shit. Kane and Professor Pink were a few people ahead of me in line to exit the room, and he made a point not to look in my direction. When his hand went to the small of her back to usher her out the door, I realized I was a total idiot. Obviously, the mighty professor didn't have an issue with fraternization, unless it was with me. Screw him. I couldn't believe how full of shit he was. As soon as I was out of the conference room, I bolted down the hall. My legs couldn't get me off campus fast enough. I was annoyed for thinking it was possible Kane was interested in me, but held back because I was his assistant. Even more so, I was pissed at him for pretending that was the case. I hadn't been imagining the signals he gave the other night at dinner. I'd nearly made it out of the building when I abruptly stopped, causing a student to crash right into me. "What the hell?" he barked. "Sorry." I started walking again. I should get the hell out of this building, but I knew myself. Certain things ate at me. If I didn't get this off my chest, I was going to be miserable all day. I needed to give Kane a piece of my mind. Screw it. Turning around, I crashed into the same student again. "Seriously?" he said. "Geez, you'll live. Don't walk so close behind people." I took off for Kane's office. I might lose my job for telling him off, but at least I would be able to sleep tonight. So what if I was proving his point that I was tightly wound? The door to Kane's office was cracked open. I paused to collect my thoughts for a moment, then reached for the door handle. Screw knocking. But a woman's voice stopped me from busting in. Her laughter hit my skin, sparking a fire that burned its way up to my cheeks. I hadn't heard Professor Pink's voice earlier, yet somehow I was certain it was her. "Remember that little Italian place?" the woman said. The one with the fireplace in the back?
Giordano's.
Yes, that's the one. We should go there again sometime. The dessert cart looked incredible.
She paused.
Although we didn't make it to dessert that night, did we?
I'd heard enough. I didn't stay for Kane's response. I couldn't. As pissed off as I was when I'd marched my ass to his office, hearing him with another woman had turned that into hurt and embarrassed, something I preferred not to let others see. So I prescribed myself my own therapy, and instead of barging into his office, I popped my earbuds in and headed home. I had zero desire to go out to our monthly friends' dinner tonight. I preferred to stay at home and wallow in self-pity. But when I attempted to cancel, Ava guilted me into showing up. So I forced myself to get ready. Screw it. If I didn't feel good, I might as well look good. Plus, blow-drying my hair was oddly therapeutic for me. I found the constant repetitive brushing and smoothing very calming. Needless to say, my thick, naturally curly hair was pin straight by the time I was done. I'd needed a lot of calming. Since I'd taken the time to make my locks look good, I went all out with a full face of makeup and even put on a cute outfit and high-heeled sandals. Davis's expression told me he, at least, appreciated the extra effort when I arrived at O'Leary's. Tonight it was only me, him, and Ava, since our other former roommate was away with her new boyfriend on a cruise. Once the three of us sat down, I was glad I'd come. I really did enjoy my time with these guys. We laughed as we caught up, mostly at the crazy stories Ava told. But then just a half hour into our night, Sal, the new waiter, came over and said he was sick and needed to leave. He asked if one of us could call Charlie to come in and take over his shift. Since there were only a few hours until the kitchen closed anyway, Ava and I both volunteered to cover for him. Plus, his complexion was slightly green, and I was pretty sure he wouldn't make it hanging around until Charlie drove in from Queens. "You look too nice to work tonight," Ava said, pointing to my feet. "And those are not waitressing shoes. I got this. There aren't many tables left, so you two hang out, and I'll come join you in between serving." Although Davis and I had ended things in a good way, we really hadn't hung out just the two of us since whatever we had ended and he'd moved out. Since I was dressed up, and awkwardness set in as soon as Ava left, it felt sort of like a first date. "So," Davis said, "this feels weird."
I laughed. "I know. Why?" "It shouldn't. It's just us. We've hung out a million times." Davis shot me a sheepish look.
"Because you look really hot tonight."
"Are you saying I didn't look really hot when we lived together and I rolled out of bed every morning?" I'd said it joking around, but Davis's answer was serious.
"Actually, I think you look beautiful all the time."
I blushed. Such a southern charmer. Davis and Ava had ordered a bottle of wine, and he lifted it to refill his glass, then held the bottle over my empty one.
"Have one with me."
I hesitated, thinking back to the last time we'd had drinks together. I'd wound up in Davis's room. With a devious grin that told me he was thinking the exact same thing, he filled my glass to the brim and said,
"Just one."
The wine definitely helped. Now that the bottle was empty, the strain between Davis and me was gone. We'd gorged on pasta and wine and caught up on the last few months. Things were feeling back to normal.
"How are Umberto and Lydia?" he asked.
It was just like him to remember their names because they were important to me. He was always very thoughtful and attentive. "They're doing really well. Still the happy threesome."
"And your thesis?"
"Good. Kane seemed happy with my progress, although who knows?" I finished off my glass of wine. "He could hate it tomorrow."
"Kane?"
"My new thesis advisor." Davis nodded. "He's kind of a giant ass," I added. Not that he'd asked.
"When are you finished?"
"Another few months and I'll be done with my thesis and graduating."
"Then what?"
"I'm not sure yet. My minor was elementary education, so I was thinking of applying to some local school districts that have musical therapy programs for autistic children." Davis smiled.
"That suits you. I could definitely see you doing that."
I sipped my wine. I was now on glass two and already feeling a buzz. What about you? Are you happy here in New York? Do you think you'll stay forever?
Maybe.
I wasn't sure if I'd imagined it, but I could have sworn his eyes had dropped to my lips.
What about you? Are you happy? Seeing anyone?
My good mood took a nosedive. I wasn't seeing anyone, but that didn't mean I was happy about it. I'd managed to forget about Kane for the sum total of an hour tonight. I sighed. No, I'm single. You? Davis must have taken my downturn of spirit as a general statement about my single status.
Not seeing anyone. But I'd like to be.
Yeah, me too. I sipped more wine.
Oh, yeah?
Tell me about the lucky girl.
Davis grinned. She's short, kind of quirky, beautiful, smart.
I rested my head on my hands. Sounds perfect. Does she have a brother for me? Instead of answering, Davis reached over the table and took my hand in his.
I've really missed you.
I've missed you too.
Have dinner with me this weekend. Just me and you.
Huh? Seeing the confusion on my face, Davis continued.
I wasn't ready to date last year. I didn't want to jump into something with you when my head wasn't screwed on straight. I'm in a better place now.
The wine must have totally gotten to me. I seriously hadn't realized he was talking about asking me out. I'd waited for this for almost a year, yet now I felt unsure. Luckily, Ava came to my rescue. She scooted into the booth next to me, playfully bumping my hip with hers, and took over the conversation. I was grateful for the reprieve. After another hour of sitting around and talking, we decided to move to the pub tables in the bar area, since the dining room was empty. Davis looked at his watch.
I have to be at the airport at 5 a.m. for work, so I'm going to take off.
The three of us made plans for next month's dinner, and he gave Ava a hug goodbye before turning to me. Only he didn't let go after my hug. Instead, he took both of my hands in his.
Think about it, okay?
I had no idea what to say, so I simply nodded and smiled. Then he was gone. The minute he was out the door, Ava turned to me.
What the hell was that all about?
He wants to take me out on a date.
And how do you feel about that?
I have no idea. I'm so confused right now.
You know what will make things clearer?
She smiled.
What?
Let's get stinking drunk.
Chapter 15.
He has the most amazing ass. Well, that's what I intended to say, but what actually came out of my mouth was, he has lemony lass. Luckily, Ava had joined me in my binge, so my slur sounded perfectly fine to her.
Who are we talking about? Davis or the professor?
I sighed.
The professor. Davis's is nice, but I never had the urge to bite it.
Ava quirked a brow.
You want to bite the pompous professor's ass?
I do. Is that strange? She smirked and lifted her drink to her lips.
Not at all. Well, the biting part isn't strange. I like a little biting during sex myself, but biting his ass when you're not sleeping with him might be a little strange, especially if you do it during a class while he's lecturing.
He's just so frustrating, so infuriating.
So maybe you should give Davis another chance?
I sucked back the remaining contents of my third drink and held the empty glass up, dangling it between my thumb and pointer.
Time for a refill, waitress.
Ava laughed.
I was done an hour ago, but I'll get your refill because I'm not sure you could make it the 10 feet to the bar.
She stood and took the glass from my hand.
You're cut off after this one, though.
While Ava was behind the bar, I dug my phone out of my purse. I had no idea why, but I wanted to scroll through Davis's Facebook account. I remembered he'd posted a few pictures with the same woman a few months back, and I wondered if he'd dated her since things ended with us. When my phone illuminated, I was surprised to find I'd missed two texts from Kane. Kane, could you possibly cover my afternoon class tomorrow at 3? A few minutes later, another text came in. Kane, sorry about the last-minute notice. Something important came up. What a jerk. Of course, he wasn't really a jerk. He was just not interested in me the same way I was in him and didn't want to lead me on, so that made him a jerk in my drunken, emotional head. I should have turned off my phone and ignored him, responded to my boss when I was in the right frame of mind, but the alcohol had other ideas. I typed back. Rachel. Sure, I'll do your job so you and Professor Pink can go back to your office and do whatever it is you do. Again. I watched the dots start to jump around, then stop, then start again. Kane.
What are you talking about?
I rolled my eyes. Rachel. Your ass isn't that great anyway. In that moment, the text made complete sense to me. Kane typed back immediately. Kane.
Excuse me?
I snorted, loud. What a jerk. And then, my texting went downhill. Rachel. I bet she doesn't come late. I was holding my phone, but I'd been expecting a text, so I jumped in my seat and dropped it on the table when the damn thing started to ring. Kane's name was flashing, and that just pissed me off even more. I swiped to answer. What?
Rachel.
That's me, your lowly TA. Something dawned on me, and I thought it was a pretty clever pun. In fact, I was damn proud of myself for coming up with something so witty. I'm your lowly TA, who has great T and A, only you're too full of yourself to notice.
Have you been drinking?
Have you?
No, Rachel, I haven't been drinking.
Well, you don't know what you're missing, because after the first one, everything that's been jumbled in your brain becomes so clear. Ava returned with our drinks to find me on the phone. Who are you talking to? I did a half-assed job of covering the receiver. It's Professor Tightbuns. Ava's eyes flared wide, and then she shut them briefly. When she reopened them, she took the phone from my hand. Hi, Professor Tight... Professor West. This is Rachel's friend, Ava. She paused to listen. Yes, she's fine. I'll take care of her. Another pause. Yes, I'm sure. We're at O'Leary's, and I'll take her home in a cab and make sure she gets inside safely. After she swiped to end the call, she put the phone in her purse. I'm keeping this, so you don't do anything else stupid. What? All I did was answer the phone. It's not my fault he's a big fat jerk. Please tell me you didn't call him that. I don't remember. Ava let me ramble on for another 40 minutes as I sipped my drink. Either I'd grown accustomed to the foul-tasting liquor, or the last Tanqueray and tonic tasted more like tonic than Tanqueray. Since I was still able to speak, I was guessing it was the latter. Ava had watered down my drink. So what are you going to do about Davis? I don't know. He's a great guy. He really is. Ava's eyes turned to saucers. What? Don't look so shocked. He's a nice guy, and God knows I haven't had sex in forever. Oh, no. Professor West. Well, obviously I'd rather have sex with him, but maybe that's all it is. Maybe I'm just really sexually frustrated, and my attraction to Kane is only physical. No, Rachel. Professor West. She motioned to the other side of the bar. He came for you. Unfortunately, I was lost in my little alcohol-marinated brain and not paying attention. I hadn't even realized she was actually pointing to something, or someone. In fact, I thought we were still having the same conversation. He'd better come for me. It may have been almost a year, but I think I still know how to use my vagina. I paused. Do you think my vagina is re-virginized from not having sex for so long? I brought my drink to my lips and closed my eyes as I tipped my head back to finish it. When I opened them, I thought I was dreaming. In fact, I was certain of it. I blinked a few times to snap myself out of it. Kane did that stupid sexy lip twitch thing as he stood next to our table.
Still here.
Ava was a traitor. Kane asked her if he could have a few minutes alone with me, and I'd said no at the same exact time she said yes. She'd shot me a warning look before promptly slipping from our table to make room for Kane.
"What are you doing here?" I scowled.
"Making sure I'm the only man you talk to about coming while you're in this intoxicated state."
I folded my arms across my chest. "Davis wants me." The muscle in Kane's jaw ticked.
"That's nice. Who's Davis?"
"My ex. Well, sort of. We had dinner tonight. He wants me back."
"So that's what this is about?"
"Well, it's not about you," I lied.
"Really?"
He sat back with an arrogant smirk.
"Because it sounded on the phone like it was about me. Well, about Professor Tightbuns, anyway."
There was at least one good thing about alcohol. It kept me from flushing when I should have been embarrassed. In fact, it kept me from even realizing I should have been embarrassed.
"So what? You have a tight ass. That doesn't make you the be-all and end-all. I have a pretty nice ass myself, only you're too much of a jackass to notice it."
Kane rubbed at his lip with his thumb.
"Is that what you think?"
"That you're a jackass? Yes."
He leaned forward.
"I meant you think I haven't noticed your pretty nice ass."
His voice had grown husky, and I felt the guttural sound of it between my legs. I swallowed and shifted in my seat, staring at him. He took it as license to continue speaking when I kept quiet.
"You have a tiny little waist. When you wear jeans, there's a gap in the back. When you lean over, I can see your G-string. You like to match it with your shirt. Wednesday, you wore a blue shirt and had on a baby blue G-string. The day you taught class and were giving out headphones, you bent over nicely to distribute them to each row. It's why I got up to help you with the boxes. You didn't think I was being chivalrous, did you? That day you had on a thin white blouse and a lacy white thong. I really liked the white lace."
My mouth was hanging open. Kane leaned in a little closer.
"So you're wrong if you think I haven't noticed your pretty nice ass. For two reasons. First, it's not a pretty nice ass. It's a fucking spectacular ass. And second, I've noticed it. Every damn day since you walked out of that bar bathroom. In fact, I watched it sway from side to side until you were out of sight that night, even though you'd just told me off."
"I had no idea."
"Clearly."
"Why didn't you say something?"
"What should I have said, Rachel? You're my teaching assistant, and I'm your thesis advisor. Plus, even if that weren't the case, I actually like you. You're not a casual fuck I'd stop calling when I was done with you."
That was harsh. I didn't want to think of Kane in that way, but then I remembered the faculty meeting.
"Like Professor Pink?"
His brows drew together.
"You mean Ginger Ashby? Professor Ashby, who was wearing a pink suit today? What about her?"
"You two seemed cozy."
Kane looked away.
"We're not sleeping together, if that's what you're asking."
If they weren't currently sleeping together, I knew they had a history. I could tell by the way she touched him, the way she looked up and batted her fake eyelashes.
"But you did sleep with her?"
"It was a long time ago. I don't make the same mistake twice."
I wasn't sure if he was referring to the professor specifically or sleeping with someone at work in general, not that it mattered. Ava came back to the table to check on me.
"Everything okay, Rach?"
My smile was sad. "Everything's fine." She put my phone on the table.
"Your phone was ringing."
Ava looked at Kane.
"I put it in my purse so she wouldn't regret something she said to you. Guess that worked well."
Kane smiled, and she turned her attention back to me.
"I'll be at the bar if you need me."
The moment Ava walked away, my phone began to ring. Davis's name flashed on the screen. Kane saw it and looked up at me.
"You need to get that?"
It stopped ringing. But when I scrolled, I saw Davis had texted, too. He wanted to make sure I got home safe.
"I'll just send him a quick text to let him know I'm okay."
I felt Kane's eyes on me as I typed. When I was done, he said,
"You want to talk about it?"
I wanted to see if I could get a rise out of the composed professor.
"We used to have sex. Then we stopped. Now he wants to start again.
Oh, and he wants to take me to dinner, too. The clench in Kane's jaw was clear.
And how do you feel about that?
I don't know. I'm confused, I guess.
About what?
He's a great guy. When we broke up, I was upset at first. But then I sort of got over it. At least I think I did. I didn't sit around and pine for him anyway. I feel like I would have if he was the right guy, you know? Kane looked into my eyes.
I think the right person would be difficult to move past, yes.
But maybe I haven't actually moved past him yet. I haven't, you know, since we broke up.
Had sex.
Yes. Kane's eyes sparkled.
Hence the re-virginized vagina.
Even in my drunkenish state, I couldn't believe I was having this conversation.
You heard that?
He nodded with a sly grin.
How long ago did you split up?
Close to 9 months.
So you haven't had sex in almost 9 months?
I sighed. Maybe I should just pick someone up in a bar and do it. Then it'll be easier to decide if it's Davis I miss or just the sex. The pupils in Kane's eyes dilated to the point where there was more black than brown iris.
That's not a good idea.
Why? You've never picked someone up and brought them home just to satisfy your needs?
I didn't say that.
Well, then why is it okay for you to do it, but not me?
Because I don't do it to try to solve a problem.
His voice turned stern.
Fucking someone won't help you decide if you want to be with another man. Trust me on that one, Rachel.
Sounds like you're speaking from experience. Kane looked away.
I'm going to grab a beer. You want a soda?
I'll have another Tanqueray and tonic.
I think you've had enough.
I huffed. Fine, I'll take a Diet Coke. We sat around and talked for another hour after Kane returned with our drinks. I had sobered up some, but still felt more daring than usual. Can I ask you something?
Will it stop you if I say no?
I smiled. Probably not.
If you weren't my professor, and I wasn't looking for my Umberto,
I trailed off. But the rest of the sentence didn't even need to be said. Kane brought the beer he'd been nursing to his lips and stared at me over the top while he finished it off. He set the empty bottle on the table and cleared his throat before leaning in. Then he curled one finger, motioning for me to come closer. I leaned in, and our noses were no more than a few inches apart.
If I weren't your professor, and you weren't a nice girl, your re-virginized pussy would be sore as hell right now.
Chapter 16.
I didn't feel half bad when my alarm went off. My eyes opened.